You're here on 8:30 a.m. KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska. Our guest today has spent the last several years fighting for our brothers and sisters in King Cove and working hard to help make the emergency airport road a reality. She's the mother of a fisherman, the daughter of a governor, and currently representing Alaska as one of our senators in Washington, D.C. It's my privilege to introduce to you today our guest, Senator Lisa Murkowski. Senator, thank you so much for being here with us this morning.
At least telephonically, Austin. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Yeah. Well, before we get going, I know that I speak for everyone when I say thank you so much for the incredible amount of support that you've shown just our little corner of Alaska. You know, just such a small place in the state, even smaller place in the world. But you've given so much attention to us, and we are so thankful and appreciative for that.
Well, it should not matter how far away you are, how small your community. We are all Americans. We are Alaskans. We are part of this country, and we deserve to have our voices heard in the halls of Congress. And so, when we have a situation as we have in King Cove, where a simple access road has been denied by our federal government, a road that could truly help to save lives, it is worth the fight. There is no community too remote or too small where we should not stand up for the people in ensuring that their health and their safety is put paramount. So this is too important to back down.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we obviously feel the same way. Something that we've been watching you speak for us in Washington just this morning. I was watching the most recent video of you where you were even going as far as to address the president on this matter. And I was left wondering, and, you know, we talk a lot about the facts and the issues. I kind of wanted to ask you a question about yourself. Where does the passion for this project come from for you? You just get so, you can see that this matters and means so much to you. And I'm curious if you could kind of illuminate for us where that passion comes from for this particular road and this project and us as a people.
Well, it's an interesting question that you ask, Austin. And my reality is that it's very simple. The passion comes from my heart. I love my state. I love the people of Alaska. And I care very, very deeply for our state and our people. And when I feel that some of the most vulnerable, in the sense of being in a very remote community, being a very small community, something that others would say, well, they're too far away to matter. We can have things happen, and it's just too small, and it's too far away for us to be concerned about it. Again, when you care about a place, when you care about a people, you are willing to do what it takes to stand up for them, to take on the fight, because they have no place else to turn when their federal government is not working for them. So the passion on this issue really comes from my heart. I have had an opportunity to meet so many of the people out there in King Cove. I was there for your 100th anniversary. I've been out into the clinic. I've not only met your community leaders, I've met your children, and I care for them individually and collectively, and I will work for them on this issue and whatever arises, because they are people who deserve to have a voice in Washington, and I've been asked to be that voice, and I'm humbled to do so, and I will exercise it as loud and as often as I need to.
Yeah, that's really great to hear, because you do feel so vulnerable. And when you don't have that authority from the federal government, coming to work for you, you do kind of find yourself wondering, who do we turn to? So it's good to have our voices being heard by our representatives. And in that light, you know, it kind of feels like as that we've exhausted every avenue we can. You know, the recent judgment from Secretary Jewell around Christmas time to not take up the road as an option, you know, that just kind of felt a lot like one of the final things that we could do, and that door was shut on us. Being our representative and being in Washington, what do you see as the next step? Where can we take this in order to see this as a reality come into, you know, our reality?
Well, I think what we need to do next is clearly outline to the secretary why the proposals, why the supposed alternatives that she thinks could be put into play, why they are not reasonable. Now, quite honestly, that should not be the people of King Cove's job. That should not be my job. But her agencies have not done the job that they need to do in fairness. I don't think that they have given her the honest information. I don't think that they have been upfront with her. And so we need to let her know that just as the people of King Cove have learned that a hovercraft option does not work, a landing craft option will not work. The suggestion that you put a permanent Coast Guard base there at Cold Bay to provide for emergency access, that is not financially feasible. It's just not realistic. I was more than a little bit distressed when I was visiting with the secretary before we had the appropriations hearing last week. And her words to me was, she says, you know, I went to King Cove and I was very disappointed because I felt like everybody in the community had kind of bought into the rhetoric, if you will. And those are my words, not hers. I don't want to put words in her mouth. But basically, everybody had agreed ahead of time that this is what we're going to say to the secretary. And it was just all going to be about a road. And she said, I was hoping to get there and have people tell me what some of the alternatives are. And I said, in fairness, Madam Secretary, you are just coming into this issue just this past year, just 1 year into this. The people of King Cove and many people in the state of Alaska have been living with this for decades. So for them, this is not a new problem where we need to have eyes wide open and embark on all these studies. This has been something that has been underway and has been studied and aspects tried, and they have either failed or the responses to these surveys come back and say this isn't going to work. When I told her that they had evaluated the landing craft option in a study that was dated back in 1994, 1993, I forget which year, I said, you need to go back and look at that, because she was telling me that was the next best option. And she did not even know that the study existed out there.
Hmm.
And, you know, it not be our job, but we're taking that on, and we will provide all this to her. I just sent her a letter yesterday of a letter that I had received from the Coast Guard. I asked the Coast Guard, what would it cost to establish a base there at Cold Bay to provide for emergency evacuation? And it details in very full measure not only the cost, but goes on to explain why it is not the Coast Guard's mission to take this on. Truly, Austin, when I was talking with her, she just so casually says, well, you know, the Coast Guard can keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
Without thinking about the impact of that the financial significance of that and how unrealistic it is. And I have told her privately and in public hearing that the road is non-negotiable. The road is the alternative that is safe, that is financially feasible, that is accessible, and it just it is the sane option, and it is non-negotiable. So I don't think that we should be messing around, if you will, trying to figure out what other options are there. What I'm going to do is make sure that she knows what the facts are and that they're unfiltered. They're not going through her agencies. But really, she needs to understand that the safe, reliable, affordable access is by road. It's as simple as that. And in my view, it's just not negotiable anymore.
Absolutely. That's interesting that you see this change happening when it comes through her staff and the agencies around her to kind of press a different agenda, and then the lack of information that she has on hand. That's really surprising and disappointing to hear that, but we we're so appreciative of you being there to be that representative out there. So,
well, and I do think that there are good folks in the agency, don't get me wrong, but I do believe that they had made up their mind before allowing the secretary to go to King Cove to listen to the people, to see for herself. They had made up their mind what to do, and that now they just needed just for her to be able to bless that. And that's unfortunate, because that is not how it was anticipated that she would take these issues into account.
Yeah, it seems when you have such a long time period with a topic going on for 20, 30 years, so many different people in office having to wrestle with it and no decision being made, and then finally, you know, I know a lot of people were hoping Salazar would be the one who would make the final decision, and then he handed it off to Secretary Jewell, and of course her perspective and her environmental concerns being what they are, you know, I know that was kind of a concern for a lot of people. So it's such a unique challenge and such a unique opportunity, really, for us out here and for the people in Washington. So, again, thank you so much for all your work. And I know you do not have a lot of time. I appreciate you giving us what you do have. I was wondering if you could field one more question, though, about a recent bill.
Sure.
A recent bill that you're putting out there that was really interesting to us here at the station for what you and Senator Begich are doing right now for more justice measures to be moved to the tribes. I know that this is something that you and Senator Begich have recently been doing. There was a story in it on Alaska Public Radio Network recently. Can you tell us, because the idea here is that we'll be moving more civil crimes and, you know, jurisdiction, if you will, to the tribal entities and away from the state. Would you mind explain to us exactly, because this will affect us, because here we have, you know, the family tribal system where if you want to go for child support, you can go to your tribe instead of the courts. What are you hoping to see happen here in the future, and how will it affect us where we live in such a tribal community?
Well, these issues of public safety and really justice in so many of our communities is so important. And I think we recognize that in many of our more remote communities, we are limited in terms of ensuring that we have adequate public safety, whether it's troopers or VPSOs. And so the effort that Senator Begich and I have made with our Alaska State Families bill is one that we really hope to advance a level of cooperation and partnership between our tribes and our state. And I think the more cooperative our efforts can be, the better off we are. I am also very cognizant, though, that with our existing tribal courts, as good as they are, as helpful as they are, it is important that we make sure that that there is adequate funding for our tribal courts. The fact of the matter is, we've got tribal courts that exist in Alaska. They play a crucial role in culturally relevant justice in our communities. What I think we need to do is work with the Department of Justice and BIA, make sure that they are committed to making sure that additional training is available and that we can really do a better job in developing tribal courts in Alaska. Some regions are very advanced. Some regions are just getting started. But what we need to do is we need to figure out how we fund these on an annual basis and not necessarily rely on competitive grants. There are some things that were put into play with the Violence Against Women Act that passed last year. We know that one of the biggest factors in improving justice in our villages is the presence of trained law enforcement, and we've got in law now provisions that make VPSOs eligible for certain grants. They call them stop and arrest grants at Department of Justice, so that our tribal organizations have more federal funding opportunities to fund law enforcement in rural Alaska, which is hugely important. We've also got provisions in that same law that allow for community health aides to get training in sexual assault response. We've got provisions that allow our VPSOs to be eligible for certain COP grants, which allow for greater training and to get equipment. So there are things out there that I think we need to encourage utilization of these funding avenues. But again, to get back to the legislation that Senator Begich and I are advancing, is a recognition that in a state like Alaska, as large as it is, as remote as our communities are, and as small as our communities are, we have to have a system that is designed to work within our villages, taking advantage of the assets that we have, and the tribal courts are absolutely clear assets. So how we can allow for a level of public safety enforcement and really justice in our communities, justice that, again, I think is culturally relevant, is going to be our challenge here. We know we've got some work to do, but it is very important that our state be willing to work with our tribes. And this has been something that has been a bit of a struggle through the years, but we're making some good headway. The state is now negotiating or discussing a memorandum of agreement with Tanana Chief Council, TCC, up north. Bit by bit, I think we're making some progress. I